You left South Korea when you were 3 years old, and you moved to Canada with your mother and father. And you say that your parents talked very little about the country you left. And there's one line in the film that I think reflects how the weight of a country's history sort of defined your future. And you said,
"All my life, Korea has been broken. I'm one of the fallen pieces. I want to know if it can ever be put back together again."
What for you was broken?
Mm-hmm. So many things on so many levels that line represented to me. Just look, the literal division of Korea, but culturally too, you know, being part of the immigrant population living outside of the country, I realized that what I understood of Korea and my sense of Korean identity was very fractured. And I think it's a very common immigrant experience. A lot of immigrant kids grow up with a very particular kind of a schizophrenic and a little bit of a pressured, you know, relationship to the country of their birth. And if they're not born in that country where their parents immigrated from and born, let's say, in America or in Canada, they still have a very heavy sense of responsibility. And yet it's a detachment. You know pretty much next to nothing about your own Korean identity because you're growing up in a country where you are not represented in the media. It's pretty much a white-dominated country, and you become very white-identified. That's the phrase I will use, in that your idea of what is Korean is seen through white eyes. Mm. So you're very, you know, distant from who you are. So once I started trying to understand, well, you know, what does it mean to be Korean, and investigating what that meant, I realized that my own personal sense of being broken on many levels was mirrored or paralleled by my own country's, you know, broken history. So I think for me, Korea is broken, you know, as a nation divided literally, but in many ways, culturally and socially, the Korean people remain broken to this day. And there are so many psychological wounds that have not been addressed by Koreans on either side of the border, South or North Korea.
And part of the process to kind of reclaim or reconnect with the identity that had been marginalized by your Western experience. Mm-hmm. You began a journey back to South Korea, kind of strangely enough, on a mission to prove that tigers are still alive in the Korean mountains. Mm-hmm. And in the film, you talk about a song that you sang when you were little about a little rabbit. Where is it going? And the rabbit was supposed to symbolize the shape of the Korean peninsula. But you say at one point it was the tiger, not the rabbit, that was the shape and force of Korea. Tell me about this tiger spirit.
You know, quite until the modern age, I would say, like in the 1960s, most Koreans who were taught, when they looked at a map of Korea, that Korea looked like a tiger. Like it actually, you know, physically, the geographical landscape, the coastlines and such, if you looked at the visual map of Korea, it was always taught in grade school and to the students that Korea was like this tiger ready to pounce. And that sort of represented the spirit, the fighting spirit of Korea, proud, resistant, and stubborn. And, you know, you cannot conquer these people. Well, what happened once Japan occupied Korea from 1910 to 1945 was that there was a whole colonization of the mind that took place of Korean people. And one of the ways in which the Japanese rule was enforced literally was to reimagine what Korea looked like in the minds of Korean people. And so Koreans were told that the country no longer looked like a tiger. In fact, it was a rabbit. It was this meek, obedient, you know, little rabbit and very harmless. And that was a new myth that was propagated that was in step with the Japanese, what they wanted in terms of policy of how Korean people would react to Japanese rule. What was fascinating to me was that that concept was then exported to, you know, immigrant populations abroad and adopted and not questioned. And for so many people like myself raised abroad, that entire cultural story has been lost.
And so this lost spirit of Korea became the focus of your search. You kind of abandoned the tigers or redirected your energies a little bit. And at the time, North and South Korea announced that they would hold cross-border reunions of families that were separated by the Korean War in the 1950s. And in the film, you introduce a 94-year-old woman, Park Han-sang, who is on the waiting list for the reunion lottery, basically. And she had fled North Korea, and she tells you that she has stayed alive all these years so that she could see her lost family before she dies. But it doesn't work out that way, does it?
No, and I think the story of family reunions, to me, is really a story of government manipulation of people's lives. You know, it makes me angry, and it makes me see how so often, you know, people are used as pawns for public policy on either side of the border. You know, there are tens of thousands of people who are still separated by the divide in North and South Korea, and family reunions are increasingly more and more urgent because the generation that actually has surviving members on the other side of the border, that generation is dying. You know, within 10 years, there will not be anyone alive in Korea who can remember a united Korea. And as the years go by, there just simply will be no one to reunite. So people will die without ever seeing their family members. And that's a human, you know, that's a human rights disaster. So North and South Korea, I think both states recognize that there's sort of a public pressure to organize these face-to-face reunions. But the reunions themselves are very highly managed affairs. And that's what really surprised me.
And it's interesting, this woman, Park Han-sang, who was such a lovely character in your film, her son and daughter would tap dance for her. She seemed so sort of joyous to be around those two family members, but she held this very definite grief for the family members she had left behind. And it turned out almost all of those family members were dead. And her son says something really poignant. He says, "My mother isn't the only one to live with longing, only to find death." And this made me realize how mournful the soul of Korea and so many of its people must be to have said goodbye to people they loved without knowing that it was forever.
Yeah, I think that really stood with me, was something I didn't realize, was how abrupt the goodbyes were, how premature and completely without any preparation, that almost everybody assumed that reunification would happen within months, you know, if not days or weeks. No one thought that the divide would be forever. So people who fled on either side of the border, they didn't take very much, and they didn't take the time to say goodbye that, you know, would be meaningful in any way. So the break was so raw that I think many people who are alive today who experienced the separation, it's a wound that has never healed, and you have 60 years of never talking to someone across the other side of the border. No phone calls and no emails, no letters. You know, the funny thing is I went through a whole journey myself making this, because when I first met these, you know, Harmonies and Harabajis, grandmas and grandpas who were waiting to see a family member, and they talked about missing, you know, a son or a sibling, I have to say I had a very different personal experience of family, because I hadn't started my own family yet. And this sounds really callous, but there was something in me that thought, oh, well, your child is only 2 years old or 4 years old. That, you can't miss them that bad. Like, you didn't really get to know them. And that's pre-having a child. I think that sort of is someone who has no connection or understanding of what it's like to have a child. And then in the journey of making the film, I gave birth to my own daughter, and as soon as she was born, suddenly the meaning of a family separation just, like, it cleaved my soul. It was suddenly, I realized within seconds of her being born, that if anyone had tried to take her away from me, if I missed her for, you know, like, just, I would. There is a death that happens. And I finally understood in a very deep, empathic, sort of soulful way, in a level I hadn't prior to my daughter's birth.